The EarthX 2024 Environmental and Sustainability Congress of Conferences is happening in Dallas, April 22nd through the 26th, bringing together all sides with one important mission: protect our planet. For info, earthx.org.
From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, a coming-of-age story. A young girl in West Texas realizes the limits of family and faith. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The memoir, Loose of Earth, by Kathleen Dorothy Blackburn, shares the story of a young girl growing up in West Texas, where the family, faith, and suspicion of the outside world are foundational. But when a needed miracle never arrives, there are questions and demands for justice. I asked Kathleen Dorothy Blackburn about how she describes her memoir.
I was the oldest of five kids, the daughter of a pilot who worked in the Air Force and then retired from that and became a commercial airline pilot and was a healthy man, a marathon runner. And my parents were white, conservative evangelicals, proudly voted for Reagan twice. And then out of nowhere, seemingly, my dad at the age of 38 years old was diagnosed with early onset, late stage colorectal cancer and given a few months to live. And our family at the time was already pretty skeptical of institutions like public education, and we were homeschooled, and of the medical industry. And my mom was sort of keen to have her children at home. And this diagnosis threw their beliefs into high gear, and they rejected the recommendation to get chemotherapy treatments and started seeking out faith healers across West Texas. But what we didn't know at the time is that my father had been exposed for most of his life to chemicals from firefighting foams that were used at military sites where he had been raised and where he himself had worked. And I only discovered that about 20 years later. And these chemicals are carcinogenic. We know them as PFAS, and they're euphemized as forever chemicals. And so this is a story about kind of the radical fringes of faith and, desperation. But it's also about an unknown environmental legacy that we were a part of.
It seems anyone who would have seen your family probably would have gotten the idea that this was an idyllic, wonderful, tight-knit family, beautiful children, a little house on the prairie, which you reference, existence. And do you think people would have gotten that impression?
You know, that's a great question. I think that that's certainly how we saw ourselves to an extent. You know, there were things about our family. There was certainly this idea that, making our own bread, and that we had sort of romanticized sort of pioneer kind of living. And we were an incredibly close family. And I write in the book, you know, that home was the prefix to everything in our lives. And we, you know, my parents really did romanticize the way that we were living.
And if you look at any family close enough, you're going to see that it wasn't as idyllic as it pretended to be in public, and that there was abuse, stress, some trauma. It seems like that's what you lay out in your story.
Yes. I would say that that's absolutely the case. And I think you're right. I think that something that I'm really interested in is, and I think part of the work of writing a memoir, and what I'm interested in reading in memoir, is how we have these public selves. You know, we have these public personas. Individuals have them, families have them, institutions have them. And I'm always really interested in stories that get give us the view underneath that public self and sort of disassemble it. I didn't tell this story. I didn't write any part of it for 19 years. And one of the things that happened that kind of unearthed the early stages of writing this book was I was taking a class, a creative writing workshop, and the teacher in the class was a writer, Luis Alberto Urrea.
I know Luis.
Yes. Oh, isn't he wonderful? Yes. He's just terrific. And he asked everyone in the room, why are you here? Why do you write? And he wanted everyone just to begin by writing the answer. You couldn't go home and, you know, come up with a really neat and tidy answer. You had to start writing right there on the spot. And I had just recently listened to an interview with the writer Amy Hempel, where she had said something along the lines of that the editor, Gordon Lish, had asked, what's the one thing about you that if people knew it, it would undo your identity? And so I was thinking about that as I answered Luis's prompt. And I knew that the answer for me was that I was with my father when he died. And that was also why I was here at the page. And I started to tell the story. And so you're absolutely right. It was kind of about getting, going behind the scenes of that kind of idyllic public facing story and getting into the harder, truer version of what had happened.
But it's done in a very West Texas kind of way. Mm-hmm. There's a universality to that theme, but then in the ways that it's done in Lubbock, it can be very localized.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I can't imagine the story happening anywhere else. You know, it opens at a big traveling evangelist tent revival that takes place on the South Plains Fairgrounds, right there in the, off of the interstate in Lubbock. There's something that the voice for me of the story was so grounded in Lubbock, Texas, and the shape of the sentences, the people. And I write in there too, just about the way that our sort of choices took shape for me, find their color and their meaning in that flat landscape, in that expansive sky, in the view of that horizon. You know, I write about my mother. She hails from Houston, Texas, but I write about how she might as well have been a descendant of those early German settlers who came to West Texas, just dug their heels in during the Dust Bowl and shot cannon into the sky to create thunder, trying to bring on rain. You know, there's this real culture to the place that I frankly found absolutely essential to understanding who I am.
Well, you tell a story from the point of the view of a young girl where it has been drilled into you that the smallest infraction could have the greatest of consequence because of the watchful eye of a God.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything takes on so much weight.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people who are raised in this kind of conservative evangelical faith will find this familiar, that raised to believe that there is this, like you said, a very watchful God who exacts consequences for sinful acts. And I already believed that before my father's cancer diagnosis. But then part of what the faith healing cosmology, if you will, was about. Some people will recognize this as part of like a prosperity gospel system of belief, is that if you just believed hard enough, if you are just filled with enough faith, that then he would be literally healed. And so the flip side of that meant that any doubt could hinder a miracle. And so what I started to believe at the age of 12 and on into 13 years old was that any infraction in my faith, anything that I did wrong that was like disobedient to my parents or was sort of what we might consider worldly. So for instance, like saying or thinking of a cuss word or having a crush on a boy or disobeying my mother, anything like that took on the consequences potentially of causing my father to die. Like I thought I could actually be the reason that he didn't live. And it's so wild for me to describe that to you now, but something that I believed at the time, and it led to some real psychological suffering and to some physical suffering as well in those years.
But in the course of your memoir, we begin to see the cracks of how that young girl begins to recognize that these rules don't make a lot of sense, and they're certainly unfair.
Yes. Thank goodness, right? It wasn't a sustainable, it obviously was not a sustainable way to see the world. I mean, part of what was happening, of course, was that my father was deteriorating physically. And so in order to keep the belief up, and I write about how I had to deny what my senses were telling me, what I was seeing, what I was hearing, what I was smelling. You know, I think that our bodies recognize signs of decay. And even at a young age, I could see that what was happening to him physically was the exact opposite of what I was telling myself and what the believers around me were saying was happening, which was that he is being healed. God is going to heal him of this cancer. And instead, he was becoming worse and worse. And what happened was this led to an inevitable, as I see it now, an inevitable confrontation between myself and my beliefs, what I was seeing and what I said to myself was happening. And I write about this confrontation. It was staged actually between me and my father. He was in a lot of physical pain, and a doctor had prescribed for him some codeine. And my mother had asked, had actually hidden the codeine from my father through a sort of series of ideas that she had about the codeine being attached to some notion of evil. And she told me where she had hidden the codeine. And I felt it was my responsibility to also help keep the codeine hidden. And one day my father asked me where the codeine was. And in that moment, I believed that if I just didn't tell him where it was, that this was the ultimate test of my faith. If I just didn't tell him, then finally this test of our faith, this battle with cancer would finally be over. And he asked for it because he was in excruciating pain. He wasn't healed in that moment.
He hurt you.
Yes, it was. Oh, it was one of the most painful. It's the most, for me, one of the most painful scenes in the book, and one of my most painful memories. But as a result of this collision, I could see it caused like finally something broke in me where I was able to see this isn't working. This is not working. I was, and my father too, I think, we were able to kind of let go of this, this myth we were holding on to. So in such a ragged and vicious sort of way.
We have to take a break. We'll be right back.
The EarthX 2024 Environmental and Sustainability Congress of Conferences is happening in Dallas, April 22nd through the 26th, bringing together all sides with one important mission: protect our planet. For info, earthx.org.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. Kathleen Dorothy Blackburn is telling us about her memoir, Loose of Earth. Your dad is very representative of the Texas ideal, a strong man physically, running the New York Marathon, 8-minute miles, and he also had strength of character. You know, he would lived in Lubbock, but he would commute to Dallas to fly for the airlines. So it seemed like he had the character that he could go into that world, that corrupt world, and still come back home undamaged by that and still return with his ideals intact. There was a lot about him that sustained the family and the beliefs and things. And so it seemed like that was the him contracting the cancer, having it attack him physically and having him lash out at you and all these things breaking down. And the ideas that we had as children as how the world works and what are the rules, and up is up and down is down. And then later you realize not so much. And that seems to be a lot of what this book is about.
I think that's so beautifully put. Thank you. One of the things I love about this conversation is the chance to, you know, talk with a reader and understand the story even better. I think you're so right. He was sort of ideal, and in fact, one of the challenges of writing the book was, you know, when we were talking earlier about going behind the scenes and kind of breaking down that public story and that what is that thing that if people knew it, it would break down your identity. It was his identity too that I had to be willing to let unravel, because he did have a kind of golden boy aura, even in his own family. You know, he was captain of the football team at Judson High in Universal City, and then he went into the Air Force, and you know, he just had this wonderful sort of physique and sandy blonde hair and blue eyes and great sense of humor and good storyteller. Where was the texture in that? Where's the, you know, where was the human in that golden boy is a question that I had to ask. And that led me to, you know, these moments of conflict where his stress and his anger came to the fore in ways that don't fit the perfect father story and don't fit that golden boy story. And in watching him deteriorate, it wasn't just a physical deterioration. He also, wasn't able to kind of maintain the narrative of himself in the same way either. So the extremes of his temper also came to bear. I think he was under extreme pressures. But you know, part of what I was so interested in writing this story, and this was true with my father, my mother, the people that we went to church with, I really wanted to probe those moments of contradiction, you know, where someone who was capable of great gentleness was also capable of great harshness. My father, who was someone who was full of health for most of his life, also became so ill and so weak. And I became his nurse in many ways, and not just his child, my mother, who was a fundamentalist in many ways and a veterinarian, and it's hard to reconcile how good she was as a vet, which is a medical, a medical vocation, who would also come home then and pray in tongues. So I was really interested in, like you were saying, those places where down didn't seem to be down anymore. Down and up were happening at the same time. And I think part of coming of age for me was about, and I write about this, especially after that codeine episode, about being able to live with paradox.
And your mother, as you mentioned, it's another thing I wanted to get to, was this contradiction that she was a veterinarian. Treating people as animals in Lubbock is very important. And yet she had a great suspicion of modern medicine and at a cost to her and the family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Something that's really interesting to me is I think that for someone like her, she doesn't see her medical practice and her study of the sciences as separate from her religious beliefs. And I think that the notion that a lot of people have, that there is just a clear-cut binary, that you're either someone who is steeped in the sciences and enlightenment thinking, if you will, or you're a fundamentalist and you're ignorant, is a misguided one. I think there's a lot of reasons why people feel skeptical of modern medicine, and they aren't always because they're ignorant and don't have a college background or, advanced degrees. And so she's a really fascinating person to me, in part because I think she gives us some insight that break down some of the assumptions we have about a binary that I don't think, that is not as clear-cut as sometimes we think it is. For her, the study of the Bible, what it has been as important to her as the study of infectious diseases. Having said everything I've just said, I don't find it easy to resolve, to resolve that. And I write in the book about how, I admired her and still do admire her as a veterinarian so much. She's a really excellent veterinarian. And I think that she exhibits a kind of expertise and control as a veterinarian that she wanted to have at home with our family and over my father's health. And when modern medicine didn't give her that, she found it in other places.
It does seem to me, in reading your book, Kathleen, the feeling was that the family and the faith of the family, this should have been enough. There was enough here. We didn't need anything else from the outside.
Yes.
And so everything that's wrapped up in this house and our faith and our church, that should be enough. That's plenty to get us through this world unscathed. But it turned out not to be the case, particularly when you have this betrayal by the Air Force with this chemicals and the exposure to your dad and him contracting the cancer and succumbing to that, you realize the world is not contained in this household.
I could not put it better than you have just put it. I think that is so right. And what I hear and find so true in what you just said, this idea that this should be enough, our family should be enough, we can educate ourselves, we can, we'll have our children at home, we'll homeschool our children. And, I hear in that too, a lot of the influence of this notion that from the, historically, from the kind of the rise of the moral majority of the nuclear family has a right to do things exactly as it sees fit, and no other authority should have any other say, and you all are enough, and my family felt totally emboldened by that and aestheticized that and embraced it religiously, absolutely. And what you're saying too, for me, that was the crux, that piece about the Air Force and the environmental piece, which, to give a little broader context on that, just has to do with, beginning in the 1960s, the Air Force, through a contract with the manufacturer 3M, adopted widespread use of aqueous firefighting foams, which contained chemicals that we know as PFAS today, or forever chemicals, that are carcinogenic. And they, at the time, the reason for it was that they quickly put out petroleum fires, that otherwise those fires would burn and burn and burn. But when they would routinely use these foams in firefighting drills at military sites across the country, they would rinse the foams away into the soil and into the water. They were very haphazardly disposed of, and they ended up in drinking groundwater sources and drinking water sources. And so, countless numbers of people across the U.S. and in Texas have unknowingly been exposed. And what that context did for me, as you've just articulated really beautifully, is it shows the myth of isolation, of this sort of notion that a person can transcend, the place where they live and are from. We don't live in isolation. We are a part of the communities that we exist in, and we are part of the places. We drink the water, we breathe the air, we eat the food, and that has an enormous impact on the outcome of our lives. And so, yes, absolutely, the Air Force, the industries that expose us to things without our consent, are part of what give the lie to this story of being enough. We are connected. We're part of an ecosystem, I think that was a crucial part of the story.
Kathleen Dorothy Blackburn, thank you so much for talking to me about your memoir, Loose of Earth.
Thank you for having me.
Kathleen Dorothy Blackburn's memoir is called Loose of Earth. It's published by the University of Texas Press. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes on our website at tpr.org. And you can find us wherever you download cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.